Well, thank you very much for that. And I know I have 8 seconds to reach the floor up here, right? So bear with me. And I don't have any cats with me either, right? So you'll have to imagine those. Thank you very much for giving me just a short introduction here to Karen. Basically, for NAGRA, we are strong believers in alliances, and alliances is a great way to fight piracy, and that's why we helped found the Alianza in South America, and we're also running an alliance in the U.S. called IPCAP. And that's why we've been so pleased to see that MPAA has really taken the mantle in anti-piracy and created ACE and tried to bring everybody together in a great effort to fight piracy worldwide. So with that, I would like to introduce you to Karen Folland from MPAA. She is the Senior Vice President for Global Content Protection. Karen?
I don't think I actually need that. Yeah, thanks. Just got to find the clicker here. Hi, everybody. Thanks for that introduction, David. I'm really excited to talk to you all about ACE today, which is the Alliance for Creativity and Entertainment. It launched the summer of 2017 and got a good bit of press from Torrent Freak with some helpful words about how this could really go down as a landmark moment in the fight against online piracy. The real mission of ACE is to address the threat of piracy, which is always, I'm standing too close to that mic, sorry, which is always changing, as I think a lot of people in this room know. And at the same time, as you also know, there's been a real growth in the legitimate platforms and a lot of innovation taking place there. And one of the things about ACE, whose membership I'll talk about in a minute, is that it includes a number of companies that are sort of at the forefront of that innovation and really offering digital content in new ways. And for somebody who's been working in anti-piracy since 2004, one of the really common refrains that I've heard about why piracy was growing and why it was happening was really this concept that it's because of outdated distribution models and the fact that people aren't getting what they wanted, when they wanted, how they wanted it, on all the devices they wanted it on, and at the price point that they wanted it on. And I think that gets harder and harder to say, and that's one of the advantages of having this larger coalition that goes beyond just the MPAA's existing members, but includes a bunch of other companies. And the real role of ACE is to work together to address online piracy and to take various steps, whether that's working with the major platforms on voluntary efforts, whether that's bringing civil litigations, making criminal referrals, or other enforcement action. So what ACE doesn't do is anything besides anti-piracy. It's not a lobbying organization. It's not a communications or education organization. It's really just about fighting piracy. So the members of ACE, there are 38 members of ACE currently. As you'll see, that includes Amazon and Netflix. It also includes a number of players outside of the US, including Sky, Bell Canada, and other companies. And so it really brings a large coalition together. I think that has a real benefit, particularly when you're talking to law enforcement. It makes it clear that you're not talking about a problem for 6 US companies. You're talking about a problem that is a problem shared by all these 30 companies plus many, many more. And I think over time, we'll see the members of ACE grow. At this time, ACE is limited to content creators and content distributors that are scripted video, motion picture and television programs primarily. So as part of ACE, one of the things that we've done is work together with the members of ACE to come up with what are our priorities. Our top priorities are standalone pirate sites and services, and there what we're mostly focused on are the very consumer-friendly sites and services that may have the same look and feel as the legitimate sites and that have large global viewerships often. We also care about standalone services that are particularly popular in one region. The next priority, and these aren't necessarily ranked by import, the first two are really tied, I would say, which is the illicit streaming device and app ecosystem, and I would fold that up together with IPTV, so subscription services. So these are the preloaded Kodi boxes or the various Kodi applications that you could access online through a website or otherwise, and then, again, subscription services that are freestanding. And then it's talking to the major platforms and working with those entities that maybe without realizing are playing a role in assisting with piracy and providing infrastructure, et cetera, for pirate operations. And then we do a lot of research, because one of the things we want to know is what we're doing having an impact. And that's sort of impacted as well the way that we have been strategizing our enforcement efforts for ACE, because one of the things that we found is that you really need to have coordinated actions. You need to have not just one case against one operator, and then you stop and pause for 6 months, and then you bring another one. You need to have global coordinated actions. You need to bring large numbers of actions. Otherwise, it's really easy just to go to another service or another form of piracy. And the tools we use, which I think I've already mentioned all of them, are criminal referrals, voluntary measures. We do something called a knock and talk, which I'll talk about more later, but that's actually showing up at people's doors and talking to them. And then obviously civil litigation is one component. So I just thought for today, since we don't have that much time, I would just focus on one of our priorities and largely what we're doing in the US. So I mentioned this priority that is the piracy devices and apps. And what I'm really talking about, again, is these preloaded devices and this live and on-demand TV content that's available. And it's very, very easy to use, very, very consumer-friendly. We joke about that it's not just that our parents could use it, it's our grandparents could use it. It's plug and play. It looks very legitimate. Probably a lot of the people who are using it aren't even clear whether it's legal or not legal. And what's interesting about this form of piracy is that people are paying. They're paying for the boxes or they're paying for the subscription. So that's a consumer, that's a sale that's lost in a sense. Recently, we've been seeing a little bit of a shift in this ecosystem, and people are really seeing an uptick in the subscription services. Those often offer, say, 300, 600 channels from all around the world, and also a VOD library, maybe catch-up TV for price points like $15 a month. So those have become really popular. They may also be growing in popularity because of the amount of enforcement that we've done in the Kodi area in our first year of ACE. So that's really one of the areas we have our eye on. And what we're also seeing is that there are a number of business models that build up around this form of piracy. So there's companies that are out there that they're offering you a whole end-to-end solution. They'll create your website for you, they'll tell you how to deliver the content, they'll host the content, and then they'll brand it with your company's brand. And a lot of pirate services are using a small number of these services. So we brought our first U.S. case. We have three U.S. cases that have been filed by ACE. The first one was against Tickbox TV. It was a seller of preloaded piracy devices that had promoted itself as giving easy access to all the movies and TV shows you wanted to see. You see, this marketing here is key to the case and to the legal claims. They specifically talked about not having to pay cable bills anymore. They talked about cutting the cord, really common phrase here, using images from popular content that they did not have any authorization to stream, and then also showing the large breadth of their catalog. These guys were truly bad players. After this case resolved, which I'll talk about, we had the opportunity to talk directly with the operator, the main operator, and he told us that they had sold 50,000 devices between February 2017 and when they took their sales offline based on the litigation, and they were selling those boxes for $89 each. Obviously, they had some costs there, but that would be $4.5 million approximately. So they made something less than that, but they made millions. So in this case, I won't bore you with all the legal details, but we did seek a preliminary injunction, which we obtained. The court said that it was clear that there was sufficient evidence of TickBox's fault. This was an inducement theory of liability. So that's why the marketing is important, because they're encouraging infringement. And the first preliminary injunction order was pretty bare bones, because the judge felt that there needed to be a little bit more discussion between the parties about exactly what TickBox had to do. So ultimately, we had a stipulated permanent injunction, which had a number of things that they had to do, the most important of which for our members was basically a kill switch. They had to send out an update that the users could not deny that would then make all of the content and all of the ways to link to the content go away. So TickBox, no longer a problem for us. We entered into a stipulated permanent injunction and a judgment. The judgment included a damage award of $25 million, and the injunction included the requirement that they stop infringing and that they take these certain steps to not assist people or provide links to pirated content. Got some press on this one as well. It's a big number. The second U.S. case that we brought was against Dragonbox Media. So Dragonbox is a little bit different business model. They were also selling a box, but they also had a huge group of resellers. So they had at least 50 other individuals who had their own freestanding websites that were selling the Dragonbox. So in this case, the corporation and the main operator were defendants, as was one of the U.S. resellers. So Dragonbox would engage in basically the same kind of marketing that you saw from TickBox. You have this free television, anything, anytime for free. You can watch whatever you want, all your favorites. You don't need a contract. You can cut the cord again. You see the scissors. And there's no monthly bills and no entertainment costs. Too good to be true. It was. This case is still ongoing. So more on that later. Then we brought one more case here in the U.S. in April. This one was filed against SetTV Now. SetTV Now is a hugely popular IPTV service. And they also, at some point in time, sold preloaded set-top boxes, although we were never able to buy one. They were also sued, unbeknownst to us, since it was under seal, by Dish. And SetTV took its service offline. These guys have a long criminal history. We're still negotiating with them, but the good news is that the service is already offline. So those are the three litigations that we brought. Just on the US side, there are cases outside of the US as well. Here's a little bit of their marketing, buy it now. Best premium ITV service, and still again talking about not needing to pay and not needing to have contracts. But again, litigation is not the only thing that we've done. So one of the things that we do is that we, and normally we wouldn't talk about this publicly, but the targets made the issue public. We will go to someone's house and arrive with a C&D, talk to them directly, and ask them to stop what they're doing. In the fire alarm? Sorry.
Thank you, everybody. Appreciate you bearing with us during this time of crisis. Thank you. All right, we're going to pick it back up and start the timer in a minute once you get going. But thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
This is going to be really anticlimactic because I was almost done. So basically, one of the things about this, the piracy devices and apps ecosystem that I was talking about, is that a lot of the individuals who create the actual apps that draw the content from existing infringing websites often, and that create the repositories that house those apps, which are like an Apple store, basically, where you get to pick and choose which apps you want to download. Those individuals, as far as we can tell, a lot of them are not making money, or if they are making money, we're not sure how. And so it's almost like a hobby. Most of them are folks that have day jobs and are doing this as sort of a sense of pride in the pirate community. and they talk to each other a lot online and assist each other. So when we decided to roll out this strategy of going to talk to the individuals that were doing that, that were actually the software developers, we decided to do a coordinated action. We did a few individual actions first, and then we did a coordinated action in multiple countries at the same time, addressing the same repositories, like a key group of these sort of app store-like features in this form of piracy. And a lot of people went to actually the tech press, and they shared the letters, and they shared their stories. And there's also a lot of forums that these individuals are in, so they talk to each other. What we saw was a big ripple effect. Actually, a lot of the developers that we knew who they were and they were going to be in the next wave went offline themselves because it wasn't really worth it to risk a civil litigation or risk somebody coming to your door, and then if you didn't do what they wanted you to do, maybe they would consider a civil litigation or a criminal referral. So you saw a lot of people drop off. We sort of continued this concept in waves, as I said. So it's been very effective for us. And here you just see some of the headlines about the impact here on this Kodi ecosystem. The other thing we do is voluntary outreach, which I mentioned before. So when we're talking, again, I'm just focusing on one of the priorities, which is the piracy devices and apps. When we're talking about the devices, a lot of those were being sold on legitimate marketplaces, eBay, Amazon, Alibaba, et cetera. And so one of the things we did was a lot of outreach with those entities. Working with them, we identified the red flags to try to tell what is a device that's not authorized and is streaming content that's sourced from piracy. And that led to a number of policy changes at those companies and a real improvement. I'm not saying you can't still find these boxes online, but it's much harder than it was a year ago. And the other thing we've been doing is criminal referrals. So we've referred box sellers and IPTV service providers to US law enforcement and law enforcement in other parts of the world. So this is really a talk focused mostly on the US action, because I thought it might be more familiar to you. You might have heard of some of these things. But this is something that we're doing globally on behalf of the members of ACE. We have our own teams, MPA's content protection team, does the work for ACE. Our actions, all our enforcement actions, have to be approved by ACE. We do the work, and we have teams in Latin America, Asia Pacific, EMEA, as well as Canada and Brazil. So that's our coverage, and I don't know, I still have some time technically left, but I know this whole thing is running behind with everything that's happened. But if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I got a question back here.
I was just curious on some of these pirate device app operators. How hard has it been to actually find the people behind this stuff? And is there anyone who's been sort of technically savvy enough that they've evaded detection? And then the second part to that question is, this seems like a little bit of a game of kind of whack-a-mole. You knock one operator down and, you know, someone just develops another box and service. Is there anything that you think that you can really do to move the needle to kind of solve this problem on a wider range?
Okay, so I'll start with your first question. When we first, I think one of the things that was interesting, because as somebody who's been litigating anti-piracy cases and then now managing them for a long time, what we had seen is a real shift out of having people that were easy to identify within the U.S. So there was a lot of perceived view that you might get in trouble in the U.S. if you were operating a pirate streaming site or you were operating a BitTorrent site or something along those lines, because there had been a lot of litigation, cyber blockers as well. But with this ecosystem, when we started looking at it, there were a huge number of individuals that were very open about what they're doing. They had companies, LLCs, some of the box sellers. They used their real names. They linked to their personal and their personal social media accounts could be easily traced to the ones they were using to promote their products. So it was pretty easy to find most of those people. I think what's a little bit harder to find is the deep infrastructure, the sources of the content, like where is the content actually coming from. But one of the things about ACE is that every member of ACE has their own content protection teams as well, and we have a lot of shared knowledge, and so sometimes we may not have identified somebody yet, but another member of ACE may have. And that's another sort of beauty of the coalition, is to be able to share information in that way. So yeah, there's still some people that have been really hard to find, but there's a very large number of people that were very easy to find, which is really surprising in this ecosystem, I think. And then on the move the needle issue, I would say we have moved the needle, because I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing less people using the preloaded boxes, because you might buy the box and then it doesn't work 6 months later, because whether it's ACE or some other company that's enforcing their rights, they take that service down and then it doesn't work and you've spent that money for nothing. Whereas I see maybe a little bit of an uptick, as I said, in the IPTV subscription services, because there you're just paying $15 a month, it stops working, you end your subscription, you go somewhere else. And the $89 box that I was talking about, the tick box one, that was a relatively cheap box. Some of these boxes can be like $300, $400, because you're getting everything, they claim. You're never going to have to pay for cable again. So I think we have seen a real benefit to what we've been doing, and some upticks in legitimate sales that you can tie together to addressing piracy in this way. I think we have to keep making sure things don't bounce back, and then watching for what's new. Because that's one of the biggest roles that we have, is also spotting the trends and where piracy is moving and how it's changing. So I hope that answers your question a little bit. It's a good question, but it's a hard one to answer. Thanks. He's got a mic.
Thank you. So I'm a little confused. It sounds like ACE is just like the MPAA, except, you know, the other aspects of it, but it's the same content and anti-piracy features. So why didn't these members just become part of the MPAA?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, one thing is that when you talk about companies like Netflix and Amazon, they really see themselves much more as technology companies. And shocker, I hope I'm not surprising anybody, we're not always aligned on policy. MPAA has policy as part of what they do. So I think there was a view that we would pick the thing that we all agree on and focus on that in one freestanding organization and have those voices together. So while it might seem like it is just MPAA doing what it was always doing, that's not really true, because we have a broader group of voices, we have more resources, and we have more knowledge, because it's not just the MPAA team, it's all those teams within those organizations, because we work very closely. Number of people in this room work very closely with ACE. I recognize a lot of faces. So that would be my answer to that question. Right, because if you had to build an anti-piracy team from scratch, that's much more difficult than taking one that was already in place, already global, had resources, had a lot of expertise, and that was sort of part of what some of these smaller companies, that was especially important to them, because they can't have a team that size with that reach, and that was a benefit for them. And if they had to build it, you need a company, you need office space, you need HR, you need everything else like that. So that was the idea for using existing resources. And there was one other question. Maybe you can just talk really loud.
Yeah, so you were saying before that there was a way that you could quantify with, you were saying earlier there was a way to quantify with. This is doing a great job.
Yeah, that's all right. I can hear.
You mentioned some ways to quantify the effect. And to me, that's a bullet point that I can get someone to read, or something I'd love to have as an elevator pitch. Do you have an example of how that's helped?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little harder, because the ACE research is not public research. It sits behind, like, informing what our content protection steps are going to do. Going to be, but I do think that one example that you can take that predates ACE, but shows what a big action with a lot of publicity can do is the takedown of Mega Upload. So obviously a bunch of people referred Mega Upload to law enforcement. It wasn't just the MPA, it was MPA, RIA, I don't know what other organizations, everybody wanted that gone. When that went down, the CMU, Carnegie Mellon University, did a study and they looked at piracy and they looked at legitimate sales. And when they saw piracy take an actual dip, because Mega was so big, they also saw an uptick with legitimate distribution. But if you take down a smaller site that didn't have the global image that Mega Upload had, then you don't usually see that much of a, you don't necessarily find an uptick like that in legitimate. So that's one public study that people can look at. With respect to ACE, right now I just don't have anything that's public that we could share, but I will tell you, like anecdotally, you can also see the shift. I have a half brother who tells me that his friends are all mad at me right now because their Kodi boxes and their apps are not working. So there's a lot of anecdotal evidence as well. But I'm sorry to disappoint you without a soundbite. Okay, I'm just right down to the end. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Karen.
Have a good rest of the afternoon.
Thank you, David.